You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara. You're going to love it.
The amazing Kate Casey.
Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you had a great week. It's my 400th episode. 400 episodes. 5 years ago, I went to a podcast network executive and said, I want to build a podcast where I track down people that are on reality shows or who have been on reality shows to see how it's changed the trajectory of their lives. And that network executive asked me, do you think enough people watch and care about reality shows? And I laughed at them, just as you are probably laughing right now, knowing how popular reality shows are and of all the reality show podcasts that have come ever since. And it's been a really wild journey. I feel like a bachelorette contestant right now. And you've been with me through so many big milestones. My daughter Sutton, my fourth child, celebrated her first birthday the day my first episode came out. My daughter Caroline was born during the last 5 years. I put an episode out the week she was born. So I have this memory for the rest of my life talking about the week that she was born. So I want you to know how special it's been to have you with me through these milestones. And I can't wait to see what happens in the next 100 episodes. This episode is so special because I got a chance to interview Lisa Ling, and it was a full circle moment. When I was in high school, Lisa was one of the hosts of Channel One News, which was this opportunity for American high school students to watch news done by young professional television journalists. So I have looked up to her since then, and I got quite emotional towards the end of the interview. As you will hear, I actually started crying when we talked about having children and being working moms. She is an extraordinary reporter. She was also a co-host on The View, as you may have remembered. She was host of National Geographic Explorer, a special correspondent for the Oprah Winfrey Show, and hosted her own show on the OWN Network called Our America with Lisa Ling. This is an 8-part docuseries that she now hosts called This is Life with Lisa Ling on CNN, and it follows her as she travels across America exploring communities that are often unknown or misunderstood, and she does episodes about the most interesting subjects and those that are not covered by other journalists. So you must watch that. And I don't know if everyone remembers this, but her younger sister, Laura, who's also a journalist, was managing editor of Vanguard at Current TV when in March of 2009, she and her colleague were detained by North Korea for illegal entry into the country. They had been attempting to film refugees along the border with China, and they were sentenced to 12 years in a labor prison for illegal entry into North Korea and unspecified hostile acts. So incredibly emotional. And you would see these interviews with Lisa and begging for her sister's release. Eventually, North Korea released Laura and Yuna, her colleague, on August 4th of 2009 after a visit with former President Bill Clinton. And when she came off that plane, when I tell you I cried, Oh, what a moment. So again, what a thrill to be able to talk to Lisa Ling in this episode. I also interviewed the directors of Buried, a four-part Showtime documentary series about how one woman's long-repressed memory of her childhood best friend's murder sparked a national debate about the power and limitations of memory in the court of law. George Franklin was a middle-aged man living near Sacramento in 1989 when his own grown daughter, Eileen, came forward and told an incredible tale. As a child 20 years earlier, she said that she'd witnessed her father rape her childhood friend, 8-year-old Susan Nason, and then smash the little girl's skull with a rock. And even more astonishing, she said she had repressed the memory for 2 decades, recovering it only after her own daughter neared Susan's age. Until that moment in 1989, she had no recollection of being a witness to this horrible scene. But now suddenly, it came flooding back in graphic and gruesome detail. So 20 years earlier, in September of 1969, Susan disappeared from her town of Foster City, California, and her body was discovered outdoors a few months later, showing signs of a violent death, including a crushed skull and a smashed ring that seemed to indicate she was warding off a blow. A bloodstained rock was found nearby. The press reported these and other facts, but police never made an arrest for her murder. Franklin and others were questioned at the time, and he went to visit Susan's graveside on the first anniversary of her death. 10 years later, his wife asked him if he had murdered Susan. And during their divorce proceedings, Eileen's mother said that George had abused his own children, including Eileen, both verbally and physically. She says that he had said to her, "If I told anybody, he would have killed me," and she believed him. So because of the shock of what she'd witnessed, and her total belief in her father, according to several psychiatrists who were questioned, she had repressed her memories of that day for years, and not until she saw her own daughter in a pose similar to Susan's 2 decades earlier, she said, did they resurface. So the trial opens in late October of 1990. She becomes the star witness. The prosecution's case revolves almost totally on her account based on the resurfacing of her repressed memory, and leading psychiatrists and psychologists testified on behalf of both the prosecution and the defense. So the crucial question facing prosecutors was whether a jury would trust the reliability of repressed memories enough to win a conviction. It's a really interesting series. The two directors live in Israel. So it was I was so excited I got to track them down. You got to put this on your must watch list. And then I also spoke to Emma Cooper, executive producer of Diana on CNN, which reexamines the life of an icon through the lens of modernity, reframing her story to discover the real woman behind the People's Princess. So every Sunday for 6 weeks, you're going to get a new episode and it's worth it. I am telling you. So here we go. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way that you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, and they pass the savings on to us. So I just got a 100% organic cotton tiered maxi skirt in red and a chiffon pleated midi skirt in soft pink. Now I'm going to wear both of them with either a white scoop t-shirt or a black tank top. In fact, wait, should we all get the same outfit and meet for drinks? Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/KKC for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/KKC to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/KKC. This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. If you're looking for new style inspiration, Saks.com is the place to go. Saks.com is making it easy for me to shop for the spring with their selection of chic clothes and accessories. Right now, I'm looking at Saks.com so I can find my new going out vibe. I'm looking for a breezy Zimmermann dress for an evening cocktail party. And for my upcoming conference in Los Angeles, I'm looking at bright Chloe blazers because I'm pushing myself to wear more orange and pink. Saks.com will inspire you to shop for everything on your agenda. So find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com. Lisa Ling, I feel like this is a full circle moment because I started watching you in high school when you were on Channel One, and we used to always laugh because I don't know if you remember this, but you would always wear choker necklaces.
Oh, yes.
That was like your look then.
I know. I don't know what possessed me, but, and this was like in the 90s. I'd wear these thick, like lace chokers.
Yes, and always lace.
A couple of kids from a school like in Michigan started a band called Lisa Ling's Choker.
Stop it, did they?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I know. I guess it was a thing.
I mean, and you worked with Anderson Cooper, and Anderson Cooper would go to like war-torn countries and be jumping from like boulder to boulder with machine guns in the background. And then yeah. Tracy Smith is on 48 Hours Mystery. I mean, do you see them at events and just laugh that it all kind of began there?
It's funny you say that because just last week, Anderson Cooper wrote a book called Vanderbilt about his family. He descends from one of the richest families in America at the time. And he was here in Los Angeles and asked me to moderate the conversation with him. And so as we were up on stage, we were, just recounting a lot of the funny stuff that happened when we were, I mean, I was a late teen and he was in his early 20s when we both started working at Channel One News. And you're right. He would go to these crazy war zones and, you know, hear gunfire and run toward it. We it's funny because people would always say like, wait, you're working for a show that's seen in schools. Like it's a school show and you're going to all these places. I mean, I covered Afghanistan when I was 21 years old and multiple wars throughout South America. And the answer was yes. We were covering stories in the world that most bona fide adult news outlets weren't covering.
Mm-hmm. I know. I really worried about all of you at some point as we watched you go into different parts of the world. I mean, I look back at that and I'm so grateful for it because to your point, I mean, other networks were not covering that. And then you also felt like as a kid, you guys weren't that much older than us, that we felt connected to you. So the story meant more because we were seeing our friend wherever you were in the world.
Well, thank you for saying that. That means a lot to me. That was the objective of having younger correspondents. And it really was the opportunity of a lifetime. I mean, for a 19, 20, 21-year-old to be able to travel the world and report stories was incredible. And the fact that both Anderson and I are still doing similar kinds of work. I mean, I've continued to work in the field because I love it so much. And I feel so alive and nothing gives me more pleasure than being immersed in environments that are different than mine because I just feel like I'm learning so much and my awareness is so heightened. And so I feel so lucky for those early days at Channel One because I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now, I don't think, if I hadn't had that experience.
What is your earliest memory of thinking, I want to, maybe not specifically, I want to work in news, but I'm really compelled by other people's stories?
Well, the reason why I pursued broadcast journalism to begin with was I grew up with the television as my favorite babysitter. My parents were divorced when I was 7. They weren't around. They were working all the time and the TV was always on, but nobody on television looked anything like me except for Connie Chung. And talk about why representation matters. You know, to me as a girl, Connie represented all that was intelligent and beautiful and graceful. And she was the only Asian person working on television on a national stage. And so she allowed me to know what was possible. And if you ask any Asian journalist of my generation, I would venture to guess that all of us would say that she inspired us to do this kind of work. But it was really when I started working at Channel One News as a young reporter, and when I was actually in Afghanistan at 24 years old, surrounded by young boys who were all carrying American-made assault rifles and semi-automatic weapons and rocket launchers, I remember saying to myself, my eyes are seeing this for a reason, and that is I need to communicate what I'm seeing to a bigger audience. So it was really that those early travel experiences at Channel One that compelled me to want to continue doing this kind of work.
And you have done this work for so long. I mean, a lot of people know you from The View, but you've also done National Geographic, Explorer. You were a correspondent for the Oprah Winfrey Show, Our America with Lisa Ling. Of all these places that you've traveled, and I don't know if this is going to be an easy question to answer, but outside of the United States, where has been a place that you have visited or the people that you've been interviewing that you felt like, this feels like home to me. Like this oddly feels very connected to me.
You know, Kate, that's such an interesting question because I don't travel overseas nearly as much as I used to because my show, This Is Life, and the show that I did prior to This Is Life, Our America, on the OWN network, it was all domestic or it has been all domestic. But I have to tell you, there are so many occasions when I have been in another part of this country and I've felt like I was in another country. I felt so distant from my life and my upbringing and where I lived. And it just goes to show that there is so much diversity and there's so much to explore within our own backyard. And I think over the last year and a half, since COVID got rooted in this country, we have interacted with human beings far less than we ever have. And instead, we're defaulting to our devices and we're following on social media, the people who espouse the same values as we do, which cuts us off from interacting with people who think differently from us. And that just results in this tension and conflict. And I just think that it's so important for all of us to try to leave our comfort zones and try to engage in a human person-to-person way, because otherwise I think we're headed down a really dangerous path and we need to get back to engagement and interaction far more.
I have always loved that you have gone to different corners of the world and covered things that not necessarily other people would cover because they would think it's too negative or dark. For example, the way you've covered sex workers, humanizing them, showing all facets of their life. I'm sure there are countless people that watch segments like that and think, that is not what I expected at all. So in all of the episodes that you've done thus far, what is the one episode that you have heard back has touched people the most?
It's hard to put my finger on one episode, but I will say that I've done a lot of work and reported from correctional facilities throughout this country and around the world. I've been to so many jails and prisons, and I love reporting in these kinds of environments because, again, as you said, I think there's this perception that that these are places that are just filled with evil, criminals, right? And look, people are there for a reason. But when you take the time to understand the backstories of many, not all, people who are incarcerated, I think that it's inevitable that you think about them and you think about what criminal justice should look like a little bit differently. And I cannot tell you how many emails or messages that I have received from police officers and law enforcement who've said things like, you know, in our jobs, we think about these things in such a punitive way. We really appreciate you showing us the benefits of rehabilitation or showing us another side to our jobs, because many people who work in corrections, they're trained, right, to, you know, make sure that these guys, that the people who are locked up stay in line and don't go on to commit more crimes. And what I would say is that so many of the people who are locked up behind bars right now have been living through lives of such intense trauma, which doesn't make what they've done right by any means. But by understanding their background a little bit more and a little bit better, then we might be able to preempt some of these crimes from happening because we will know how to treat it better and not just punitively. And that to me, when I receive responses from law enforcement saying things like that, that really means a lot to me.
Well, I think you beautifully do that in the first episode of this season of This Is Life with Lisa Ling. Again, this is an 8-part investigative documentary series that follows Lisa as she travels across America exploring communities that are often unknown or misunderstood. And the first episode is obviously very true and due to your heart. It's the legacy of Vincent Chin and the murder of a Chinese American in Motor City in the 1980s. Your mother is a Taiwanese immigrant. Your father is a Chinese immigrant. Obviously, this was a very personal story for you. Could you tell everybody a little bit about Vincent Chin?
I will. And before I tell you about this particular episode, I'll just say that this season, season 8 of This Is Life, we take moments in American history that didn't make it into the history books, And we sort of dissect them to look at where we are and where those, how those incidents impacted how we are living today. And so in the case of Vincent Chin, as you said, he was a Chinese American man in Detroit during a time of an economic downturn in the automobile industry. And it was a time when Japanese automobile makers were being blamed for producing more fuel efficient cars. And that resulted in many American auto workers losing their jobs. So Vincent Chin was at a bar celebrating his bachelor party and got into an altercation with two out of work auto workers who basically threatened him and said, "You people are stealing or are taking away our jobs," accusing this Chinese American man of being Japanese American. And so they got into a squabble. The two men get kicked out. They wait for Vincent Chin outside of the bar. They chase him down and they beat him to death with a bat. And they never served a single day in jail or prison, even though they themselves pleaded guilty and expected to go to prison.
They did.
And they ended up, the Vincent Chin case, while his family never got justice for his killing, it did become the first ever civil rights case involving an Asian American. And why do we look at that incident? Well, as we all know, since COVID was rooted in this country, Asian people have been scapegoated and the virus has been weaponized against Asian people. You know, when the former president characterized it as China virus and Kung flu, that I think, I mean, I'm not laying it all on the former president, because this is something that has been happening mm-hmm. to the Asian community since Asian people first came to this country. And that is blaming, you know, we're, when there's a crisis, we're always looking for someone to blame. And it's easy sometimes to blame Asian people because our stories aren't told. I grew up in this country never having read anything about contributions that Asian people have made in this country, the severe levels of discrimination Asian people have felt. And so when you don't have any kind of frame of reference for Asians existing in this country, it becomes so easy to overlook and dehumanize a whole community. And that's what happened, I think, with Vincent Chin. That's what's continuing to happen as Asian people get scapegoated for this virus.
And then tell the story. I just love the gentleman that worked for the Chinese trucking company. That was really like such a great added bonus to this episode.
Well, as you said, we try and look at this from multiple different perspectives. And very often when Asian Americans or anyone has been scapegoated in America, it's very often over jobs or any kind of like economic downturn, right? And look, right now in this country, there is a fear of China, right? Chinese labor, the fear that this virus came from China. There's a fear that jobs are being taken from American workers and sent all over the world. And we feature a Chinese company that decided to operate in Lancaster, California, which is a community in California that has had so many problems with poverty and gangs and violence. But nevertheless, this Chinese company that is the biggest manufacturer of electric buses based itself there and hired people in the community, including people who were formerly incarcerated, and many of them. And to see this workforce work alongside the Chinese engineers and the Chinese bosses and the opportunities that they were given to better their own lives, and that this Chinese company looked beyond their criminal background to allow them to not only get hired, but ascend up the corporate ladder. And then to hear these formerly incarcerated people say that they feel protective of their Chinese bosses, that really meant something. And it goes to show that sometimes it takes, and by the way, you know, right now there's this conflict between the US and China and the companies that operate here. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it takes looking at things a little bit differently, and those workers at this company are so grateful for the opportunity that Chinese people have, you know, this Chinese company have given them. And it's just a different way of looking at ways to stem stereotyping and the discrimination of a people.
Absolutely. So in this series, you're going to watch Lisa talk about American militias, sex workers, an episode on the Halloween about the conspiracy effect. I can't wait for that. Chicago's history of violence, gay panic, the murders of wealthy Native Americans during the 20s, sexual assault in the military. You are just hitting out of the ballpark. And I have to tell you, you have to tell your sister Laura, who's also a journalist, that when she was being held in North Korea, I cried my face off. And when she left the plane, I lost my marbles. So I followed that story. I followed both of you. I'm so grateful that she's back with you. I want you to know how much I respect you. And the fact that you're a working mom, just, I hate to get emotional. I get emotional. I don't even know why. just, I'm really grateful. I think what you're doing is so important. And I value you and what you do.
Thank you. Well, I mean, ultimately, what I'm trying to do is for our kids, you know?
Yep.
Empathy is developed when you're young. And the more our kids are aware of these histories, aware of the contributions mm-hmm. that all people in this country make, I think that they will be inheriting this world and can make it a better one mm-hmm. if they're armed with this knowledge and tolerance.
Absolutely. Tell everybody where they can watch your show and where they can find you.
So starting on October 10th, you can find This Is Life every Sunday at 10 o'clock, 9 central. And all past seasons of This Is Life can be found on HBO Max.
Oh, and they're so good. I binged like 1 week and I binged a bunch of them.
Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes that you like, so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, and even on the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
I have tracked down Yotam and Ari. They are in Israel, if you can believe it. And I am totally obsessed with this docuseries on Showtime. I started watching it. I ignored everyone in my house and I couldn't stop watching. This is a compelling story, one that I had never heard of. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hi, Kate.
So when she first came forward, she gave so many details that at first some could say, well, they were in media outlets at the time. But really, there was extra details that no one had ever heard of, correct?
Her account was very, very detailed. And I mean, one of the things that makes this story so amazing is how Eileen's memory works. You know, it is so unique, her way to tell a story. I mean, this is someone who suddenly remembered something that happened, like a traumatic event that happened 20 years ago, and she could tell it, like, you know, down to the most minute detail and have so much emotion in it. And it's really hard. I think what makes this story so gripping is you're trying to figure out, is this a real memory or isn't it? And she makes it so hard to tell the difference.
I think Eileen's memory is super unique. And as you go by the series, and when you start delving into more memories she had, you realize also like how fluid is her memory. She remembers more and more stuff at one point you have to ask yourself, is you remembering more real stuff or false memories? But a memory is very, very hard to get a grip on because she has such a traumatic life, and it's a thing we know better nowadays, but we still don't know. I mean, what makes the difference between someone who can remember his childhood or his life in a very concrete and linear way, and someone like Eileen, who actually forgot about events that happened to her for 20 years, and then they all came back.
What makes this story very different from any other true crime story also is that the biggest mystery in question here, you know, there's the mystery of the murder of Susan Nason, the girl, but there is another mystery, and that is the mystery of, you know, the human mind and our memory and how it works, and Eileen's memory. And the investigation in the series is into these memories.
So do we know that after 1989, well after the case was over, did she continue to have memories triggered?
Yeah. As you can see, like in the final episodes, she had many more memories after the first trial was done. She had more memories of, you know, crimes he committed. She had more memories about murder he committed, and also more memories about like what happened to her as a child. And they all came like with bits and pieces throughout many years later. And what's also amazing about this story is that Eileen took them, all those memories, to the police, to the court. She didn't just like, you know, kept it to herself. She took it to court, and she took it also to every, I think, news outlet back in the day. She talked about those stuff so many times. And this footage is just amazing to see.
And we don't want to give spoilers to the series, but she remembered more and more and more stuff. And yeah, that was eventually also kind of our downfall.
I wondered a little bit about her relationship with her siblings, because she came from such a big family. And I know it really caused a rift within the Franklin family.
I mean, you know, the stories of abuse that went on in the Franklin household were so difficult to hear. I mean, you know, we hear in the series all the testimonies of her siblings, and their stories match up perfectly, and you get a sense of this house of hell, as the cops called it back then. And, you know, yeah, it was very hard to hear it. And I think this trauma that they endured as children really created ripples throughout this case. And you could see it when it came down to Eileen's relationship with her siblings. Basically, you know, this case ruined this family. It tore them apart. And, you know, some supported Eileen, some supported her father. And they had these alliances that kept on changing. And at the end of the day, they kind of just, no one talked to anyone in that family.
Yeah, and I think it's even more right to say it's not the case that, you know, destroyed the family, but it's George Franklin, the father, maybe even the mother, who destroyed the family, and all the kids were, you know, so traumatized. It's horrible to hear this. But the thing is, when Eileen came forward, I mean, it just took all the dirt out, and the laundry was like, you know, mm-hmm. being cleaned like all over the news and through like in front of like hundreds of millions of people. And then I guess in a way it's like it's been traumatized again and again and again. But what's also super difficult to hear, it's like how little people knew back when they were kids about incest, and how little America knew about incest. And to hear the stuff like before Eileen Franklin case, the statute of limitations was only 3 years. This case actually made a huge difference because it actually expanded the statute of limitations. So people can actually sue or go to the police for abuse they suffered when they were children. But hearing this case and seeing like, because George Franklin was the firefighter of the town. He was like the, you know, the perfect man, the perfect family behind those, you know, this perfect house. and to hear what went out like inside of it. And then to realize it happened so much in the States back in the days, it's just so hard to hear.
He was seemingly a very handsome and charming man. So the idea that he could be a madman was too hard for people to put together. I'm wondering, where is Eileen now? Do we know about how she's doing now and how her life has changed?
We were in contact with her, but she really values her privacy nowadays. And so we can't really reveal too much about her current life, but she built a new life for herself. She still stands behind her story, I guess.
Well, she's, I'm sure, grateful that you were so kind to her, because I do think that you have done such a great job with such difficult material to show kindness to her and to really the whole story. So I applaud you. And I'm grateful you did this, because it really is a fascinating topic. And it does so much to highlight abuse of incest, but also how kind we should be to victims and to allow them the opportunity to tell their stories.
Thank you, Kate.
Thanks. Thanks so much.
Diana is produced by October Films, and it reexamines the life of an icon through the lens of modernity, reframing her story to discover the real woman behind the people's princess. The executive producer is Emma Cooper. I'm thrilled to tell you I found her today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. Hello.
Tell me about your interest in Diana. Has this always been an interesting, iconic figure in history that you were always captivated by?
I could be classed as a super fan. I'm sitting here wearing one of her jumpers. This is one of her very...
You know what? You're right. Yes.
Yeah. It's the famous jumper with the sheep on. I adore Diana, and I have long been obsessed with her. I was 5 when she got married. I remember watching it, and she was just always in my life. And as a filmmaker, I'd always wanted to look at her life in a different way. And it was an amazing opportunity with CNN and October Films to be able to finally get a bunch of women together and figure out how we were going to tell the story of Diana that felt very 2021.
How do you think her story, the lens through which we look at her, is different in 2021 than it would have been in, let's say, 2000?
Looking at her now, her story is incredibly modern. At a time that we didn't realize at the turn of the century. And in 2021, I look at her and I did think she's the blueprint of a modern woman. But she was ahead of her time, and she kind of got judged harshly for being a modern woman, I think.
Especially now that I think about the way that she was a parent. To take her children to so many different countries, expose them to charities that were not within the box of the royal family, that was really quite unique for its time.
100%. So many of the things that she chose to do as a woman and as a public figure were seen as quite odd back then. Right. And now they're like brilliant. And they, they are a brilliant example of parenting. They're a brilliant example of what it is to be a mum. And at the time, I think she was seen as a bit out there, a bit odd, and not always right. She was judged extraordinarily.
So one example of carving her own path is what she did for landmines. And now we think about that in the year 2021, that a royal would walk out into a field. We had no idea what would have happened to her.
Emotion towards charity and causes was just part of her soul, part of her heart. She didn't have to try to do, like, you know, I don't think she got up one day and was like, okay, I'm a princess now. I'm going to adopt some charities and touch people that, you know, other people don't want to touch. She genuinely did it from the heart and her instinct. I'm like, what she did for HIV when she shook the man's hand in the hospital. Extraordinary. And she did those things very, very, very naturally. And I think she did really break ground in that way. And as you see in the series, we showed the footage of when she is looking at the landmines and she gets back in the car and one of the press people says they are going crazy in London. The government are saying you're a loose cannon. And she is literally bewildered. You see her going, I'm trying to do good. Like, why would anybody say that I'm a loose cannon? And what I really learned from that moment, and I'd never seen her reaction to that before. And what I really learned from that moment is that she, by being incredibly soft and from the heart and emotional, a lot of, and particularly men at the time, wanted to say that she was crazy. That people always said that she was crazy. She was a loose cannon for doing the landmine. Now, you and I look at that and go, that is the most extraordinary thing that she did. She didn't just talk about it. She went and she did a very risky thing and she made herself vulnerable. And we all looked at that cause and we all took note and we never had done before. And all everybody's then said was, she's mad. And it's like, no, she's brilliant. somebody in episode 4 calls it soft power. And I love that phrase. And I think it really sums her up. You know, she kind of stepped into her own power in a way that redefined what being a powerful woman was. And it was with emotion and vulnerability and a soft touch. And it wasn't about being Margaret Thatcher. It was about being Diana. And I think that what she did, which makes her feel to me like she's a blueprint for a modern woman, is that she allowed herself to reveal her complexity. And her brother actually says that in her funeral eulogy. He's like, you know, the irreplaceable, the unique, the complex Diana. And I think what she did with a lot of her causes, you know, we ended up watching quite a lot of her speeches, which don't get much airtime. And she did this fantastic eating disorder speech in 1993 and basically stood up and really talked about her own bulimia. I mean, that is extraordinary for a princess.
Absolutely.
You know, like, you know, with the palace denying all of these things. And she stood up and she made this speech. And, you know, and it was for a good, it was to shine a light on a decent cause. And now I look at it and I think, oh my God, she's talking about herself. She was being really honest. So I think that being able to look back at those speeches and the things that she said and the things that she did, now knowing a lot more about her, you realize that all the time she was revealing herself in public at a time when people didn't do that. And now they do it, but people are still think it's quite a new thing to do, kind of like speaking your truth. You know, I think that when we said about making a series and the reason why it was so important for me to give her this kind of take, this look, was because, and I keep on saying this, the blueprint of a modern woman is because as women, we are now allowed to say, I struggle with certain things. I don't feel great all the time. Mm-hmm. Or there are things that I feel passionate about, or these things have happened to me. And we are not diminished anymore by admitting those things. Diana was continually diminished and told that she was mad if she admitted to any of the normal things that we are now allowed to feel and reveal as women. So, for example, you know, before the divorce, you know, the Charles's kind of camp for you know, people around him were constantly briefing the press and saying that she was obsessed with the Camilla situation. She was crazy. She was paranoid. They used language like this. And at the same time, they were denying the affair. They were saying it's all in Diana's head. Now, we now know that that is not true.
That's
she
right.
She was bang on the money. And again, they used madness against her as a reason to not believe her. I mean, you know, it's kind of, it's almost Shakespearean, isn't it? You know, it's like kind of like say the woman is mad and don't believe anything that she says. And then everything will be fine, you know? So I think that truth and sincerity were very important to her.
Do you think that her life and ultimately her death shook the royal family and the way that they looked at the firm and the way they operated it was forever changed because of her life and death?
Well, I mean, her death nearly brought the monarchy down. You know, there's no getting away from that. And it reformed it forever, you know, with the Queen literally being kind of told what to do by the nation because we were not happy. We were not happy about them being in Balmoral. We were not happy about the flag not being at half mast. You know, the Queen has never been told to do anything. And all of a sudden, she decided she had to address the nation. Because I remember at the time, it was out of control. You know, the nation were not happy with the royal family. And that has never happened before. And it hasn't happened since on that scale. And then I think her legacy has been constant change and modernity in the royal family as displayed through her sons. And as you said at the at the beginning, her parenting, that's still with us. You know, we see it in the way that the monarchy is evolving. We see it in the way that William and Harry are managing their own lives and their own families. And it's brilliant. It's wonderful to see it, I think.
Yes. Well, there are 6 episodes, which is amazing, because it's a little dessert every week. So The Girl from Norfolk, Royal Rivalries, Die Mania, A Royal Rogue, The Price of Freedom, and Her Legacy Continues. This is going to be a must watch. It's on my list. So thank you so much. Just tell everybody where they can watch it.
CNN, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time.
The Amazing Kate Casey.
I want to thank my great guests today, including Lisa Ling, and remind you to leave a 5-star review. Join the Facebook group Reality Life with Kate Casey. You can follow me on Twitter at Kate Casey. I tweet about shows and during shows all week long. My Instagram is at Kate Casey, CA. You have to check out my must-watch list that I post on all my socials. And you can find that list by subscribing by going to katecasey.substack.com to get that in your email every Monday. And my TikTok is It's Kate Casey. And finally, please check out my Patreon for bonus podcast episodes, life anecdotes, true crime, stories about the aristocracy, and all of the episodes about the Brian Laundry updates with Jonathan Mark. You've got to check it out. Go to Patreon, patreon.com. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.